Happy Healthy Tuesday. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And today, I want to revisit with you a conversation that we had in August of 2019. At that time, we had just had three back-to-back mass shootings within a week: El Paso, Dayton, Ohio, and Gilroy, California. And today, we haven't heard of any mass shootings perpetrated by an angry white man, although there have been 23 gun incidents since the first of the year. But we're not hearing about them. Instead, we've witnessed the mass assault on our nation's capital by a mob of angry white people. And this conversation from 2019 feels as timely now as it did then, as we all try to make sense of how we got here and what is it that we can do, if anything, to calm down the rage and to find some peace. These are my thoughts in response to what was occurring at that time. And I stand by this assessment. I stand by those sentiments. And I hope that it stirs in you a conversation with yourself and maybe a conversation with your family members or close friends. Something to think about on a more philosophical scale that goes a little deeper than how do we address a mass hysteria. And the overarching question is, what is the nature of man or mankind? Are we destined to destroy each other and ourselves? Or is there some other way that we can engage and move forward by recognizing the potential darkness in all of our psyches? So here we are. We won't be opening the phone lines today, but you can still send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com or follow me on my Facebook page or Instagram to leave a message there. As always, thank you for tuning in. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX, and on to the show.
Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Tyler.
How are you doing today?
I am well. I have so many thoughts in my head.
You and the rest of us this week.
It is a lot of action for the summertime when it's supposed to be kind of the chill, regroup, hangout time of the year. It's a lot. That I don't have the answers to all of the things rolling in my head that I'm grappling with. I don't think anyone does. But I sure hope that I don't spend the next hour just spinning in my own thought process. I hope that there are other viewpoints and perspectives to add to this conversation.
Well, so, what's at the foremost of your mind today?
All right. So a couple weeks ago, while I was on my trip, I've been trying to figure out how to do this show. And I'm torn between two things when I do the show every week. Sometimes I want to get really lofty with the topic and kind of talk about, you know, the metaphysical, existential, philosophical ideas of the world. And then some days I just want to do something, you know, straightforward. Let's talk about parenting. But I've been trying to figure out how to talk about the nature of man and not just are we good or evil, but something that I see in myself, that place that I go to work on a regular basis. It's like, wow, I have a capacity to really get pissed off at people. Like, I really have that capacity right below the surface to feel angry or wronged or, I don't know, just frustrated. And it's not my favorite quality of myself. Like, for a long time, I'd say, well, it's because I'm an Aries and I'm fiery, and that's just the way we are. And you're an Aries as well. So, right?
Sure am.
Okay. So there's that. So I'm just an Aries. We're just Aries people, and we're fiery, and we feel things strongly. And then the clinician in me thinks, well, it's that polar thing, right? Like, the depth of my love is matched by the depth of my capacity to feel anger. You know, that we... If you look at polarities, and Jung talked a lot about them, that, you know, we can only really experience joy and ecstasy to the level that we've experienced trauma and grief. That, you know, the deeper our wound, the greater our capacity to love. And so I think about those polarities in, you know, myself or in my life, and I think, okay, so is my work to eliminate the part of me that can get angry or feel rage or can feel frustrated or you know, have disturbing negative thoughts about other people? Is that the work? Or is the work to accept that that's a part of who I am so that I can, in polarity, use my energy to have a greater expanse for love? So as you can see, that idea for show has been spinning in my head, and I couldn't really parse it down to something enough to really make a whole hour. And then last week, Dave Congleton called me and said, hey, would you come over to the AM radio side and talk about what's going on? This happened right after the Gilroy shootings. Mm-hmm. You know, come over and let's have a conversation about what are some of the causes of this. And so we had an hour and a half discussion, you know, interesting calls about the enormity of the issue, that it's not just one thing. You can't just say, well, we need to fix the family breakdown, or we need to eliminate all guns, or we need to deal with mental health. That it's so many pieces to the puzzle that it starts to feel overwhelming. And when we start to feel overwhelmed, we go numb because it's too much to take in. And so that numbness tamps down our ability to take any actions, good or bad, right? That we tend to, when we're overwhelmed with too much of anything, good or bad, we get numb because we don't know what to do with the enormity of those feelings. And so where we are now is in a place of numbness as a country, because no one knows which direction to go. I don't know if my pool of empathy is large enough to tap into anymore. And I don't know if my ability to take action and, you know, do something has enough fuel in its fire. So during the break, Dave said to me, are you going to do your show on this next week? And I said, oh, no. I have tapped into that idea too much, and I'm going to go on. And then El Paso, and then Dayton happened over the weekend, and I felt like I have to pull these ideas together. I have to pull the idea of what is the nature of man and where are we as a nation when it comes to our relationship to guns, to violence, to each other. Why are we seeing predominantly young white males in the center of these shooting sprees? Are they just the loud canaries in the coal mine to what a lot of people are feeling? Because on some level, and hear me out, on some level, I think unless we recognize that we all could be capable of the same blind rage and impassioned responses about something, it's really hard to address what's going on, because I think our first gut instinct is to say, these are just evil people that are doing this, so we need to get rid of the guns, keep them out of the hands of the evil people, or we want to say the mentally ill people, but we'll talk about that later. But if we are able to say, it's just evil people, I would never do that, no one I know would do that, that's just someone who's sick, when we make them the other, then we lose our capacity to realize that what we're seeing is a representation of a civilization or a country or a way of being that we're all a part of. And that when we only want to look at one side of who we are, I'll only address the ways that I'm a good person, and I will ignore the things that I don't particularly like about myself. And again, this is where it gets a little existentially and weird. When we ignore those parts of ourselves, we in ways project them out onto other people and hate them for the things that they do that we are in some way capable of doing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I was just thinking about it.
I know.
Yeah.
I just wanted, I'm watching your eyes to see if you're getting lost in that comparison. And so I think in order to talk about where we are today, we have to look internally to where we are today individually. How are we expressing our feelings towards those things or people or situations that we don't like?
And when you say we, do you mean the world or
just you
a country
and me?
Or just
no.
You and me?
I think in all ripples out into the universe, but again, not casting stones or pointing fingers, maybe I'll just point them back at myself, but sometimes when we put ourselves in a place where we feel like we are above any of these horrific actions, then we fail to be part of the solution. We actually continue to be part of the problem because we separate ourselves from what is happening, and then we don't own it. We don't do anything to change how we got there. It becomes the other's problem. It's our administration's problem. It's the mental health professional's problem. It's family's problem. But it's all of our problem. And I hate to think that we're so fragile as a people that every time we have a change in administration or a political party, that we either come unglued or we come together or we point fingers. You know, I understand that leadership is huge, and it's one of the things on my list of how we got to this place, a lack of leadership. But I think the issue is deeper than that, that we as a people have to have some sort of sense of grounding about what it is to be an American and be part of this country or be a human being that's strong enough to withstand changes in administrations and perspectives. This idea that, you know, we're in trouble because our government has failed us doesn't float enough. Unless we want to become a country that is one ideology and everyone falls into line behind that ideology, and then we're that close to having, I don't know what you would call it, a monoculture of one thought, and then that somehow becomes safe because if everyone is exactly the same, then we don't worry about gun violence because the rules apply to everyone and everyone thinks and behaves the same. And so then that's when we're safe. But wasn't the whole experiment of this country that we could take all of these ideas and religious beliefs and family structures and come together and it would be even greater because we'd have the capacity to express who we are?
Maybe some might be asking right now, how's that experiment going?
That's my question. Was it such a great idea overall? I don't know. Because this is a grand experiment. And if it's not our experiment, if it is something that we believe in, what is that thing we believe in? Because right now it feels like we've got divided lines in many different ways. My perspective is the only perspective, and everyone who feels differently is my enemy. And I don't care if you're someone who is fully on the side of peace and love and good vibrations, or you're someone who is following a white supremacist group. If you feel impassioned about what it is you're following, your ideology makes you separate from others that disagree with you.
So what do you want to hear from people today? You gave that phone number out at the beginning.
I just want to know if anyone else grapples with all of these existential thoughts. Am I the only one? I don't lie awake at night, fortunately, but I definitely spin a lot during the day. You're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. All right. Are we ready? You are listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back and continue this conversation.
Some see life as a broken promise. Some see life as an endless fight. They think they live in the age of darkness. They think they live in the age of light. It's an angry world. And everything is gonna be alright. Yeah, it's an angry world. Yeah, it's an angry world. Some see life.
You're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I am that reluctant therapist, Elizabeth Barrett. And I like that song, Tyler. It's Neil Young talking about the angry world. And he's, if you listen to the song fully, I didn't know how far we wanted to rock out today, but if you listen to the song fully, he's talking about those polarities, you know, that we see the world from two different lenses and we are an angry world and yet everything will be all right because everything happens at once. Happiness, sadness, anger, rage, joy, ecstasy. It all is happening at the same time. We live in the most beautiful time ever in history, and it's also the most terrifying time in history. We are filled with potential and opportunity and new ways of seeing things, and yet we are regressing on so many avenues. Like polarity plays out all the time, and polarity plays out in our own lives, that we are all a combination of our capacity to love and our capacity to hate and what it is we do with those things. So I'm going to throw a little bit more of the philosophy of how I got to this place, although I want to say right up front that I am not a philosopher or was not a philosophy major, as evidenced by the D plus that I got on in philosophy at UC Santa Barbara.
What was it that made you not a philosopher?
I don't know if I just wasn't ready for the depth of what we had to learn. I guess I got a C minus, not a D plus. I don't know why I struggled, but so a lot of Nietzsche has stuck with me over the years. And when I was looking at this topic for today, I kept thinking about what kept coming up for me is, how did we get to this place where we have such anger? We have young white males primarily going in and shooting people up, you know. They're being driven in a lot of cases, from what we understand, by an ideology that they've jumped into, that's something that speaks to them, that makes them feel like they belong or they have a perspective that's so right and so strong that they are moved to take an action. And so I can't help but think that what we've lost is an ideology as a country that people, these people, a lot of people, can buy into and fully embrace in such a way that they feel grounded. And in times when we have a vacuum of beliefs or an ideology, something else will go in and fill that. So Nietzsche was talked about the Great Enlightenment. And when the Enlightenment came, it was the death of God, and not in the form of organized religions, but kind of in the sacred or the spiritual, that thing that tends to hold our soul together, that thing that grounds us as individuals. And again, I'm paraphrasing Nietzsche, and if you're a philosopher, feel free to call in and fill in the blanks, but I wanted to get to the point of this idea that with God dead, which generally means without an ideology that we can root ourselves to, man becomes anxious and lost and drifts. And so it makes space for other ideologies like communism or fascism or white supremacy or whatever that ideology might be that people grasp onto. And they put themselves 100% into that ideology because it alleviates that anxiety, that sense of nihilistic, nothing matters, you know, existential emptiness. I'm not saying that it's right. I'm just saying that that tends to be what happens. Eric Fromm, who is a psychologist from the 60s, talked about this very kind of dark perspective of mankind, that without some sort of ideology or guidance, man will either oppress or become the oppressor, that he felt that humans couldn't stand the capacity of too much freedom because they didn't know how to fill that. And so they would either allow themselves to be oppressed, they would follow a leader, or they would become the oppressor. And so those are some dark ways of looking at the nature of man. But I'm just curious to know how you feel about that. Do you feel like our general nature as human beings is that we need guidance and we need structure and we need a place to put our belief system, or we run the risk of throwing ourselves behind an extremist ideology that can end up harming and hurting other people? And isn't in some ways some of the impassioned ideologies that people have thrown themselves behind, like swastikas or hammer and sickles, not unlike people following the cross into war for hundreds and thousands of years? And then I start to think, well, is maybe that's just our nature is as a warring people. And what we're seeing today is just the continued breakdown of our lack of ideology. Is it a lack of God? Is it a lack of the spiritual? Is it a lack of something worth putting our hearts and minds behind? Some people would say it's the breakdown of the family, that the family system was something that we could put ourselves 100% behind. Some would say that it's a lack of opportunities or hopelessness in a country that promised opportunities for all who came here, and that turned out not to be true. And so that disappointment turns into rage and anger and disappointment. What I hope it doesn't become is this idea that it's just mental illness, that anything that anyone is impassioned about is a mental illness. You know, President Trump said in one of his talks that part of the issue was that white supremacy is a mental illness. And that's the breakdown in culture. But white supremacy is not a mental illness. It's an ideology. It's filling a vacuum. And if you start to look at the violence that we see as a country as just a symptom of mental illness, then, again, you're just walking away from our part of the whole problem. Because if it's just someone who's mentally ill, then it can't be us. But that's not true. Mental illness is different than someone who has a break with reality or a break with the structure in society that kind of holds us together. And I think it's a fabric that's very fragile that holds us together. And there's a difference between a mental illness and mental health. Someone who picks up a gun and goes into a store and shoots people has had a break in their mental health. They have broken down their systems of functioning. But a mental illness, a true mental illness, does not necessarily cause someone to become enraged enough to pick up a gun. As a matter of fact, you know, that's, if you look at the research on who is doing these shootings, it is not the severely mentally ill. And then, unfortunately, if you look at the statement from the American Psychological Association, the president immediately of that organization, Rosie Phillips, came out and had to talk about, you know, that the public health crisis we have is about gun violence that's fueled from the APA's perspective by racism, bigotry, and hatred. And that the combination, she said, the combination of assault weapons and hateful rhetoric is toxic. And psychological science has shown that when you have a lot of hateful rhetoric and easy access to information that spreads that rhetoric, that spreads that social contagion of thoughts and emotions and behaviors around, that it does impact groups, that it can lead to extreme behaviors. But that does not mean that it's specifically a mental illness as we understand mental illnesses. And when we blame mass shootings on mental illness, it just continues to stigmatize mental illness and it prevents people from reaching out and getting help when they need it. So if it's not mental illness that's causing mass shootings, if it's not a breakdown in the family, if it's not violent video games, if it's not the economy, if it's not poverty, if it's not a loss of hope, then what do you think this is? I'm just looking at the list of things I made that could contribute to the state of our nation of anger and gun violence: access to guns, video games, our politics, our political world, poverty, lack of education, fear, racism, all of the isms, and then ultimately a lack of leadership, that maybe we all really are just looking for someone or something that we can believe in, someone we can follow, that will give us a sense of pride in our country. And without that leadership, then we're destined to just fall to violence. One of the things that I came across when I was putting this together was a little blurb on CNN from Morning Joe. Do you have that handy, Tyler? And it was a kind of a montage of our president speaking out on all of these different events of gun violence that have happened. And you'll kind of hear this. Well, I'll let you listen to for yourself to see what you pull together. But if we're looking, if lack of leadership is one of our issues, then what is a better way for our leaders to approach the nation in dealing with this? So, Tyler, hit that clip from Morning Joe.
We are joined together today in sadness, shock, and grief. The pain and grief we all feel, a nation in grief, shock, horror, and sorrow. A country music concert. A place of sacred worship. Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. A Walmart store. We are praying for you. Our thoughts and prayers are with the victims and families. Let us pray for healing and for peace. Join all Americans in praying. America comes together as one. We pull together. We join hands. We lock arms. We are all joined together as one. Together, we lock arms to shoulder the grief, and we are here for you. We will never, ever leave their side. We are here for you. We will stand by their side forever.
So does that inspire you?
It was repetitive. A lot of the same things were heard, obviously, if you were listening. Yeah.
And if you look at 2019, there have been more mass shootings than actually days in the year.
Mm-hmm.
So that speech has been recited over and over. So if that speech, those words, aren't enough to unite us, what's missing? What kind of leadership are we looking for? I don't have an answer. But it's interesting because some people will say they're angry that the president isn't showing more empathy or isn't being a stronger leader. But what is it that he could say or do that would change how we view each other on a day-to-day basis in this country? What is not being said? Is it because it doesn't sound sincere? I think part of the ways that we go numb about really devastating experiences is to blame those things that we don't agree with as being the problem. If we had a better president, we wouldn't have this problem. But we've had different presidents and we've had this problem. And we've had different administrations and we've had this problem. Maybe things have escalated at this point, but I don't think that we've really ever had a time where we didn't stand in some ways divided. It's just whoever feels like their point of view is being represented the more fully at a period of time feels the most empowered to speak out about their position or their point of view, and the other side or the other groups kind of go underground. But then when their group raises to some sort of power, they get loud and the other group kind of loses their voice. But it doesn't mean that, you know, there still hasn't been a time where we really understood how it was that we all fit together as a group. I go back to the grand experiment. It seems like we only have, you know, a couple choices. We become a monoculture where there is one ideology that everyone who wants to be part of this culture must follow so that we can feel safe and that we know that the person sitting next to us on the bus or shopping with us at Walmart or going to a concert with us has the same basic ideologies and ideas that we have. And if they don't, then they're not welcome in the society. We can go that way. Or we continue looking at the grand experiment of this mixture of all sorts of religions and backgrounds and belief systems as somehow being a stronger whole. But how do we get to that whole? What does that whole look like? Because I go back to my idea of this vacuum. If we don't have something that grounds us, if we don't have an ideology that lifts us up, people are going to tend to fill that vacuum with some other kind of ideology. It opens up and makes space for more dangerous, what we would consider dangerous ideologies like communism, fascism, white supremacy. But isn't something like the flower child movement an ideology, or peace and love for all, or the nonviolence movements, are those not also just ideologies? And if we want to go full Nietzsche on the conversation, are we lacking as a country any sort of God? And I don't mean organized religion. I don't mean that. But are we a godless nation that lacks a real center stone of sacred, of a sense of the sacred? One of the interesting things about cultures and societies is that when you look at the health and well-being of societies overall, the countries, how a country supports or not supports, how a country treats their most vulnerable, children and the elderly and women, is an example of how that country operates as a whole. The health and well-being of the country is dependent upon how the country, how the government treats and supports their most vulnerable citizens. And if you look at our country as a whole, we have the ideal that we support our most vulnerable, our children and our elderly. But in reality, we're moving more towards a society that institutionalizes children and the elderly in some sort of institutionalized care. And is that really a country that's supporting the well-being? And look at our track record on how we treat women. So if our health and well-being as a country is based on how we're treating the most vulnerable, then maybe our ideology is really failed or flawed. Maybe that American dream idea that people have come here under the promise of, you know, reaching the American dream is not sustainable because it's really just about material wealth and not about spiritual health and well-being. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. Hi, Mickey, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, I think I wanted to add, I wanted to bring something here that's kind of a way of lifting. There are lots of things that we can do that do not necessarily require that we become Pollyanna-ish about it or put on blinders. However, I feel that there are techniques that we can have for ourselves. I practice transcendental meditation, for instance, and have for over 40 years. And in times of trouble, and of course, you know, you're not exempt from that simply because you meditate or simply because you do anything, you know, beat drums or do whatever it is that you do. You're not free from the trouble of being, but at the same time, you're also in the midst of the joy of being. And every once in a while, you need to kind of allow yourself to leap out of those circumstances mentally that you're affixed to in spite of, you know, the danger of the situation. You know, in the Bhagavad Gita, you have Arjuna in the middle of a battlefield. He's fighting a battle against an array of an army that really represents everything that matters to him in his life. His whole family is out there, but they're doing evil stuff. And he's told by Krishna, who's his charioteer at the time, hey, man, you know, you need to realize you got to step back for a moment. The man who has, or the woman ultimately, the human being, who has this capacity to do and to follow through on what's necessary, must first go deeply within and do the work of, you know, cleansing the self through this sort of natural process of deep meditation. So that's one thing, and then there are other benefits to that, of course. That's one thing I'm suggesting. We have a lot to celebrate about our being, even in the midst of this very traumatic war that we are fighting of consciousness in our world at this time and with the problems that are affecting our planet. But we can't just fold and not hold forth with the truth that came through in that constitution simply because the people who wrote it happened to be male and racist and about 90 other things that we don't like about them. There was still truth that still need to hold forth.
Appreciate that. Mickey, thank you for taking some time to call in and share today, because I think it is a big topic that I'm throwing out there and a lot of different reasons. And I don't want to come off as sounding like I am despondent or feeling like needing any sort of lift, because I think what I'm looking at is actually the polarity on the other side. That we spend a lot of time talking about and living in this conversation of how we can do things better. Because I work in the mental health field. And so how do we help people with their mental health? By meditation, exercise, good, healthy relationships, joining with community. I'm all about that. But I think today what I wanted to really focus on is that dark side, that polarity, the other side of the story. You know, what is it about ourselves that we're not recognizing that is contributing to this sense of separate or anger or divide as a whole? What is our part in this? Because we can meditate and we can do exercise and we can, you know, do things to uplift ourselves. But at the same time, we also have to be able to go deep into the dark of our own capacity to join into an ideology that's just another ideology. And that's what we're fighting against, I think, is these conflicting ideologies. You know, if we talk about the Constitution or our founding fathers and what the ideals were of starting this nation, they were in many ways set up, this constitutional ideas were set up to favor those who had power. And so we can see that, and we're trying to change what that looks like. But there, until we can identify some sort of ideology or some sort of way of looking at what it is to be an American, and I think it needs to be outside of the American dream, which again is really just about material wealth and well-being now, and without some sort of groundedness in that ideology, people will be lost, because you can achieve all sorts of levels of material wealth and still be existentially miserable or despondent and completely lost. And then what do you do if you get to that point of having reached the American dream and you're still completely bereft of any sort of true north? And what if you've been promised the opportunity to get to your American dream, but all of these doors are shut to you along the way? What do you do with that angst or that anxiety? Where is the true north? Where is the story that is the American story that we can all join behind? I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You're listening to an encore conversation from August of 2019. Right after the mass shootings in El Paso, Dayton, Ohio, and Gilroy, California. And I was working through my thoughts about the grander question of what is the nature of man. And I feel that my thoughts at that time connect very well with how I'm feeling today. And I wanted to share this conversation again with you. And although we aren't taking calls, you can share your thoughts with me by sending me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Or send me a message through our Facebook page or Instagram. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. Destroy your soul. Ooh. Rage. There's no room for rage in there. There's no room for rage in here. Ooh. Ooh. Some place to go to be mad. It's a sin. Treat your body bad. When anger really gets the best of us, we've really lost our heads. Often say a lot of things, oh darling, wish we'd never said. Oh, reason gets beyond control, and the things we do. Makes me ashamed of my meanness, baby. Makes me want to do things right. Someday soon, I hope and pray like Jesus, I'll reach that wiser age. Hope I will learn I really know. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And I know that I started the hour off with this kind of lofty idea of what is the nature of man? Are we all just destined to follow an ideology that leads us down a path of evil? Or are we inherently good and we get lost along the way because we don't have a path that we can follow? Or are we just a violent being on the planet since the beginning of time? I got done watching the series Game of Thrones, and it felt like the only two things that have existed since the beginning of time, sex and violence. And are we advancing past that? And then is the gun violence we're seeing today even related at all to any of this? Why is it specifically these mass shootings happening with these young white males who seem to be kind of caught in their own inability to express their rage and anger in any other ways other than taking up a gun? What does that say about who we are as a people? Hi, Polly, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, Elizabeth. Thank you for raising this topic of conversation. It's extremely important. And I agree completely with what you've been saying, and I appreciate and feel the tension and the discomfort that's falling within the silence between one sentence and another. Mm-hmm. Because I think hatred is born from hatred and fear. Well, it's born from discomfort. The causes are all of the long list you mentioned earlier, and anything else in your life, the fact that someone looked at you the wrong way, didn't like what you said, cut you off in their car, mm-hmm. whatever it is, all of that discomfort and fear causes hatred. And we are people, the human species is a strange beast, and all of the other precursors to our species have gone extinct, and we could do that as well, or we could figure out how to be more tolerant, how to live together better on the planet, doing the things that support our planet, that we're not good and we're not bad, but we are both, and we are sponges, and we are so easily influenced by our leaders. And I think right now we're at a time when it's a time of great division, largely because of our leadership. You know, it may be that we move 5% in one direction or in another, and this leadership can pull us so far just by slowly turning that ship, slowly emphasizing the division and the differences between us instead of the bringing us together, which will also, if it should happen with a future leader, it will happen very slowly as well, and it will turn the ship in a better direction. So I think conversations like this are critically important, and I just wanted to say I'm all with you. I support what you're talking about.
Thank you, because I do sometimes wonder if I'm just if I'm only in my own head with these conversations, because I just want to throw out to you, Paul, you know, how did, you know, Nazi Germany occur? Because there was a leader who was, magnetic and spoke to the people and gave them what they thought they were needing and lacking. And then this whole ideology rose up in place. Like, I guess in my head, I keep thinking, how are we vulnerable as human beings to being swayed by whoever the next leader is? That I feel like some of the work really has to be in our own self, that we shouldn't be so fragile that a leader can come and completely change how we move through or envision our world.
Yes, I hear that completely. And I think what happened under Hitler's reign, it was many, many, many years in the making. It was people having a buildup of fear and economic decline and being picked on, feeling picked on by many, many forces. But it really doesn't even matter who they are and what they are. The point that you're raising is that we're all so vulnerable, mm-hmm. moved, being persuaded, and then the question is, what are we being moved to do? Are we being moved to it's so easy to get caught up in finding the enemy being another human being or maybe a species and then turning against them and just sowing more and more division. Or we could go the other way. We could be taught, persuaded, told, convinced that, no, that differences are okay. Let's talk together. Let's sit together. Let's figure out how we can overcome this problem. Let's identify our problems and solve them together. And so I think those are the two sort of basic options. And right now we're being, as in the, you know, Nazi Germany time, we were being told that there was one type of individual that was evil, and we went off and did our best to rid the world of them. And then I think we have just as easily an opportunity to be pulled back and talk together and figure out what are the specific issues and problems. And it's a long list, but the list of the desire to sit down and do the right thing and solve these problems for the love of us and for our children and for this amazing planet that we inhabit, that motivation is great too, and I just wish we'd focus on that.
Agreed. Thank you, Paul. I appreciate you calling in. And you know, I don't want to lock too heavily down on the Nazi Germany example, because I think it's just one of, we can go the other way. Whenever there's some sort of magnetic leader or, you know, someone who is compelling, that people will fall behind. You can look at Gandhi or Martin Luther King, that people are swayed and moved to follow someone who has an ideology where we tend to lack them in ourselves. And I guess that's what I keep going back to, is if we're talking about mental health and well-being, what is it that we need to teach or learn ourselves and then teach our children or our families and our communities, because I don't even know if we can sit down and have a conversation and get over our differences, because it's whoever's in power gets the loudest voice, and those who feel differently kind of get quiet for the period of time until their opportunity to be in power comes to the surface. I don't know if we solve it in that way. I think I keep falling back to, we need some sort of individual ideology that is not so easily swayed or in not so desperate need of leadership, or we need to accept that we are, as human beings, in need of some sort of leadership, and then how do we as a country create that? Hi, Riley. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi.
Hi.
In listening, I think you just touched on it somewhat.
Oh.
I feel as if we are trapped in like we've opened another Pandora's box, maybe the atom being one and media being the next one, or the, I guess it was before. But I just feel like we're caught in with so much media, and it just seems, I get disheartened because it feels like it's an unrealistic thought to ever go back from our media-driven society and entertainment as whatever percentage of media it is. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we can get back from that, and I feel as if it's just constantly setting our labels for everything to the point where we no longer get a chance to form our judgments of other people based upon their inherent analog selves right in front of us or whatever experience we might have. Now, I know that not everybody listens to media. I know there's some people that don't have TV and still read books. But when I look at the generations that are coming up and my own children, you know, and I'm sure you've heard it all the time on different topics, just people feeling powerless to unplug their kids and themselves. And I just think I like to imagine what would be going on if we didn't have media, and what did the world look like, you know, before we even had the TV set. So I'll throw that out into the conversation. Thanks.
No, thank you, Riley, for calling. And yeah, that is a whole nother big piece of it. I'd add to my list of what has kind of driven us to this gun violence society, or a society that's, you know, more days than we've had in the year, looking at a story of an angry person shooting an assault rifle into a group of people. But I'm not saying that guns aren't the problem, because without access to the guns, we wouldn't have this mass shootings, but we would still have the anger. We would still have the rage. We would still have the sense of disconnect or lack of ideology or sense of hopelessness. And I think that as much as I would like all guns to go away, that's just, you know, my biased feeling of it. I don't think that getting rid of the guns is going to get rid of the vacuum that we have as a culture. I don't know. I don't know if that's the answer, but having the gun violence in our face on a daily basis, I think is in some ways a strange blessing as a canary in the coal mine, because we can't keep turning our back and saying everything's fine, because when you have something so horrific as these mass shootings, it doesn't allow us to now go numb again or to bury our heads, that it's not a leadership issue of just one administration. It's not just an issue of lack of access to education. It's not just an issue of family breakdown. These mass shootings are a daily reminder. Wake up. We need to have something bigger to grasp onto than our own individual desires and needs. It's not about us as individuals. We have to find some group ideology. Just my thoughts. Rick, thanks for calling in. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
I think that what's really happening is that, and when Ronald Reagan was running for president in 1980, he began using might makes right rhetoric, and playing divide and conquer, turning one group of people in the United States against another. And he was using the image of the black welfare queen as a way of people blaming each other for the nation's problems, which were not really the result of anything that we were doing. It was what the people at the top were doing and messing up the economy by allowing rampant inflation to take place. Anyway, Reagan made a lot of proposals, but he basically said, if you elect me, I will make the economy so strong by lowering taxes and deregulating business that everybody will benefit. But that's not what happened. We ended up with the homeless. Mm-hmm. We ended up with the rich getting tremendously richer and the poor, while we ended up with the homeless. Mm-hmm. So that whole ideology didn't work out. And yet it's been promoted nonstop by Republicans ever since. So we've got like almost 40 years of that ideology. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, young people who have not yet fully developed mentally absorb this might makes right attitude and the idea of blaming someone else for their problems. And they act on those impulses, you know. The reason that they pick young people to be soldiers is because they don't have real consciousness of the effects of their actions on other people. They don't have the empathy to sympathize with people that they're hurting. So the young guys especially, I think, have been the shooters in most cases, although there have been a few exceptions, but the exceptions were still might makes right kind of attitudes.
I appreciate that, Rick. Thank you. And I also don't know if it would just be Reagan, although that would be in my lifetime's most relevant. But I'm thinking about Gangs of New York and in the turn of the century, early 1900s, and you know the turning against every new immigrant that came to this country, the Irish and the Italians were considered the enemy of those who were working and holding jobs. And so the government continued to use the way of polarizing groups as the enemy. It always goes back to this idea that without some strong understanding of why we're Americans and what that's about, greater than just our capacity to gain material wealth, in some ways hurts us. Peter, thanks for waiting. You get the last thoughts today. What's on your mind?
Oh, I appreciate that. And I just wanted to bring up, when you brought up Nazi Germany, and then even though you played some recordings earlier with Trump trying to console, the problem is with the, if you'd played some recordings of the things he said during rallies when he was basically demonizing Latinos, and I focus on El Paso, demonizing Latinos and calling them all kinds of names I don't have to repeat. And the thing is that what happens is that, and also at the rallies, people are yelling like, send her back, and all this stuff. And that kind of thing, there's a term which I first heard Tom Hartman use a couple of years ago that's called stochastic terrorism, where what you're doing is you're saying things that will make people who are already on the edge and kind of paranoid and people who feel like they have to find a calling, and that gets them to act out. Have you ever heard that term, stochastic terrorism?
No, but we'd also call it social contagion, where when you spread some information out to masses enough, they start to respond and behave in ways that toxic rhetoric involves.
Yeah, it's a really sad state. There are a lot of people in El Paso that would like Trump not to come there tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, and I think, and I played that clip, Peter, because I wanted to say that there's not much more he could say, whether he felt it or we think that he's just, reading off the prompter. I don't know what more he could say, because he's just another figurehead at the top of the pile who's trying to lead a country that has so many different ways of seeing the world, that how do you appease or connect or correct that huge story, our disconnected story?
Well, I would like to see him from here on talk about things that can unite the country instead of tweeting and talking at rallies for, in ways to basically energize his base, the people who he sees as his loyal followers. And that's the problem. That's exactly, and when you brought up Germany, that's how Hitler did very similar things.
I agree. I think it's one of the huge pieces. But then what happens when we don't have Trump and we have someone else in office and there's a group of people that don't like the rhetoric or the story they're telling, and then how do they respond? I think that's our dilemma. I want you to think about ideologies. I want you to think about your own mental health. I want you to think about what it is that I stand for and believe in. And is it something that's inclusive of all, or is it requiring that I just take care of myself and my own and everyone else is my enemy? How do we look at our neighbor as us? This has been a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Instagram, send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. I'm going to leave you with a song by Michael Franti called The Flower. I cry every time I listen to it. Please check out the video that goes along with this, because it's all about gun violence. The whole video, the whole effort of this song is to bring about awareness of the pain that gun violence brings to our society. Thank you for supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
When you're feeling all alone, we could be the reason to find the strength to carry on. In a world that's so divided, we shall overcome. We can be the healing, we can be the flower in the gun. We could be the healing, we can be the flower in the gun.
What would I say to my son or to my daughter if they came and asked me about these days? What kind of reason could I give for all the hate that's standing in the way? Wish I could tell them that nobody's gonna judge them, and every stranger on the block is gonna love them. No worry in the world could ever hurt them, but I can't say that today. Whoa.
No one could ever take your pride from you. Speak your truth and let your spirit fly, 'cause we could be the healing. When you're feeling all alone, we could be the reason to find the strength to carry on. In a world that's so divided, we shall overcome. We could be the healing, we could be the flower in the gun. We could be the healing, we could be the flower in the gun.
Say to every woman who was ever told by a man, don't try to reach too high. What could I say to every girl who was betrayed and told to keep the pain locked inside? Wish I could say nobody's ever gonna judge me. Every stranger on the block is gonna love me. No bully in the world is gonna hug me, but I can't say that today.
Dropping a pebble into a pond and sending ripples out to the world.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Everybody say,
oh. Flower in.